During the Switch, Pivot, or Quit chat, we talk to women that have successfully navigated through some of the plot twist years of life and are eager to share their stories and what they've learned in the hopes of inspiring, teaching, or making even the slightest impact by candidly owning their truth. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, and I'm your host, as well as chief encourager and author. And there's a reason that I created and host this podcast. It's for you. I was in your shoes. And for those who don't know, I want to give you a little background as to how we got here and why we're here. In short, I'm a former sports entertainment publicist turned traditionally published author and now your podcast host. When I worked at the NBA, I had a front row seat to all things spectacular and entertainment. I managed everything from red carpets to work in the playoffs. But somewhere in between, I started to wonder what was next. After doing some serious personal development work and eventually quitting, I was determined to get my first manuscript published. With no prior publishing experience, within 4 months, I had a deal in hand with Simon & Schuster to publish my debut book. After making a split decision, I drug all of my belongings down the stoop of my building in Harlem for a stoop sale to help finance a one-way ticket to London. Exactly 11 months later, my first book was published, Preseason Loved. It was released nationwide, and I had the experience of a lifetime living in hostels in London, rooming with complete strangers in shady council housing flats, getting lost among the canals of Venice, and trying to avoid capture by the Royal Palace Guards in Morocco. That was the start of my journey to a drastically different life, my own switch, pivot, or quit. I hope this show serves as encouragement and inspiration for you, showing what you can do when you block out the demands of who others think you should be and go for what truly feels good to you. On today's show, we're chatting with Elaine Fluker, author, entrepreneur, and host of the Supported Sexy podcast, who is self-described as a passionate storyteller for simplicity purposes, but by industry standards, she's an accomplished powerhouse. She's a former senior writer, editorial director, and executive producer, having worked across multiple media platforms with some of the industry's top outlets and brands, such as Condé Nast, People, Martha Stewart Living, Essence, Latina, and Huffington Post. She has appeared as an expert guest on the Today Show, Nightline, CNN, VH1, Inside Edition, and more. Elaine has been a guest speaker at the United Nations, Columbia University, Spelman College, New York University, NYU, in addition to editing the works of Pulitzer Prize winning authors. If that wasn't enough, she's also created content for brands such as L'Oreal, Google, Dell, and BMW, produced more than 300 web videos, created more than a dozen web series, and in 2012, she launched her company, Chic Rebellion Media, a content agency that creates multimedia content that empowers women to amplify their stories and control their own narratives. Let's go ahead and get into this awesome interview with Elaine. So welcome to the show, Elaine. So happy to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. And if you guys don't know, I was previously or recently, let's say, on Elaine's podcast, Support is Sexy. So you definitely want to make sure you go and check that out as well. So as you know, on this podcast, we talk all about the switch, pivot, or quit experience. You've had your own SPQ experience, and I'd love for you to start by sharing a bit of your story with our listeners.
Yeah, well, as you know, I love the name switch, pivot, or quit, right? I feel like that's something that we all go through at different right. points in our journeys, and I certainly have been through mine. But in thinking about this question, I thought about late 2015. I had actually in 2012, I started another business called Chic Rebellion TV, and it was an internet TV network for women of color. So I was very discouraged or distraught, I should say, at the time with the kind of images that I was seeing in the media at the time. You know, reality TV still at its height now, but was really at its height then. And it just was all of the images, though, at that time, it's different now, were a lot about women of color, especially women in general, just cat fights, physical fights. It was just a strange time in media. So I wanted to create something where it showed women in a different light. So in my mind, to put it in brief, I was thinking of being the Bravo online featuring women of color, right? Except I didn't have the Bravo budget. It's fine. Whatever. We all have to dream, right?
Yeah.
So I started this network. I filmed these shows and I did all this work. I did four different series with women that I know who are great personalities who have gone on to do television and other things now. Had this internet TV network, launched it, went through some things with funding, and I really bootstrapped it and did it, was doing it all myself. And when the day the network launched, I lost my full-time job. I was laid off. It was a lot going on during that journey, right? So, but it was an amazing experience. I was excited that I did it. But then 3 years into it, because I started 2012, so late 2015, I started not to love it as much. And I really went through a tough time of trying to figure out why. And it wasn't because it wasn't working. I didn't have the money that I wanted to, for sure, to do the kind of shows at the level that I wanted to. Mm-hmm. Especially being someone that comes from media, you get used to those big budgets.
Right.
You realize when you're doing it yourself, it's like, oh, you have to pay for that? You know, that's how much that costs.
So every little thing, yeah.
Every little thing right out of the pocket. So I was funding it myself. As I said, when the day the site went live, ironically, or maybe not, I lost my job that was a six-figure job that I thought was going to be a thing to help me get my money back and all this money I'd invested. So I had been through a lot with the business. Mm. And I would say it wasn't that I didn't love it. I guess it was more that I got to the point where I was thinking, is this the thing that I want to put my full energy into? I'd given years and late nights and working through the night and going to work in the morning. And I just had to have sort of a quiet moment. And it was around the holidays to say, is this the thing that you really want to put your energy into to make it work? You know, I still believe that it could work. And I was going through a transition with it at that time, figuring out how it could work. But then it was like, do I even want this to be the thing? So I will say that that was the moment that I decided to pivot. And I had, gone through in 2015 this workshop, I will say, called Momentum, that I talk about a lot on my podcast and other places. It's in New York. They also have it in DC, but it's sort of a personal development workshop. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I learned throughout that journey was the fact that I didn't know how to ask for and accept support. Right? Mm. Was something I didn't realize. So I started saying this mantra of support is sexy, support is sexy, after going through that workshop and learning that support is sexy. Mm-hmm. And I started mentioning it to other women and seeing them sort of light up when I would say it to them. And that during that time in 2015, when I was thinking about support is sexy, which I had started saying to people, and it just felt right. You know how you get to that point where something feels right, even though you don't know exactly what it is. That is when I decided December, I think I actually did this on December 31st, maybe, I created Support is Sexy on social media. So I, you know, went on Instagram and Twitter and everywhere at Facebook and created Support is Sexy and just said, okay, I'm just going to post positive information, affirmations, positive women, entrepreneurs, women that I feel I'm inspired by, that other people might be inspired by. And that is what Support is Sexy is going to be. Didn't know what it was going to be, but I said, this is what I'm going to focus on. I told the person who was working with me on Chic Rebellion doing social media, I'm going to pause it for a while. I don't know how long. She had been with me for 3 years and she understood. And I just knew at that point I needed to make a change. And I didn't know what Support is Sexy was going to develop into. I didn't even know about podcasts at that time or anything else. But I just knew that I needed a change. And that was the start of doing something different, the journey that brought me to where I am now. So I will say it was so fun to think about that. What was my SBQ moment? And I would say that was one of the big ones.
Mm-hmm. I really like how you realize within doing something that you were passionate about and you thought that you really wanted to be doing outside of a 9-to-5, how even within doing that, you had to realize and sort of have that self-reflection and say, wait, do I even want this to be my thing? Do I want to keep going with this? And then you made your pivot, because a lot of times people are looking for this one thing outside of their 9-to-5 that's going to sort of be their savior, their passion project, their thing that they can transition into. But sometimes that changes with our own personal growth, right?
Right, exactly. And I think too, we to your point, we sometimes get caught up in what do they call the sunk cost fallacy also. Mm-hmm. Like I put so much time into that thing, which I certainly had. I put so much money, which I certainly had. All of these things that you put into and everyone else thinks this is the thing I'm going to be doing. There's that too. You know, I had to come to terms with all of that too. And just like I said, the holidays, it was a great time to do it. I was away from New York for a little while, visiting my family in Atlanta. I just had to get quiet and say, is this the thing? Because I knew I could not necessarily make it work, but I knew I could do everything in my power to try to make it right. I knew I could go hard because I had been doing that. And I had to say, is this the thing you want to go hard on? Because it's going to be difficult and you're going to lose your passion for it. And I still, another thing to come to too, I think you and I talked about this on the show that you were on with me. You have to also think, this isn't necessarily what it has to look like for you to continue to do that thing. So in other words, for me, my passion wasn't really the internet TV network as much as it was creating space for women to share their stories.
So it
still could be your passion or the thing that you want to do, but maybe that's not the vehicle, or maybe that's not the vehicle at this time. That's another thing. Who knows years from now what this will look like, right? So that was another thing.
Yeah, that's so true, because a lot of times we operate off of what's in front of us and what we know. And like you said, when you started putting together Supported Sexy, you weren't even so familiar with podcasts. So who would have known that you would have turned it into a podcast and started to really make some headway in that space, because it was unfamiliar to you. So that's just another note for all of you out there listening. Be open to new mediums of expressing yourself and getting your thoughts and your work and stuff out there, because you never know what could be that thing that might gel nicely with what you already know. And for you, you've held multiple like senior positions and stuff at some of these top magazines and whatnot. Was there anything that you learned from the publishing and media industry that you've been able to use and transfer into your work that you're doing now?
Yes, that's a great question. I think, well, one of the most memorable and wonderful really experiences for me was my first job in journalism, and that was at Essence when it was Black owned. It wasn't owned by Time Inc. at the time.
Right.
No shade to Time Inc., but it was just different.
Yes.
Right. It was just a different vibe.
I remember those times.
And it was just, it was different. And I had never, I went to school at a Black university at Hampton University, but being in a work professional environment that was all about empowering Black women was life-changing for me. I will say that I really came of age as a professional at Essence, and then went on to work at other companies, Martha Stewart, iVillage, and that weren't all about Black women. But it was just such a powerful experience for me, and it really taught me that you can create a work that is about empowering other people or uplifting other people. It didn't have to be, it's business, but it didn't have to be cold, and it could be empathetic, and it could show compassion. So I will say that that was really the experience for me through working there, being able to learn that, especially early on in my career, that that was possible. And I think now Support is Sexy is so much about, well, support, obviously, but really being empathetic, supporting people, being compassionate, letting people know that there's a way forward, and either providing that way, or sometimes you just need to know that it's a possibility that you can move forward. And I think Essence was very much important to me in that way. And working under Susan Taylor, who was the editor-in-chief at that time, the god, Susan Taylor, but just even working with and for her and how much she cared about the audience. And she used to always tell us as editors that you have to meet the reader where they are. So that is why it was important for her, or important to her, that we go to like the Essence Music Festival. This was in the early days of the festival. But she's like, you need to meet the reader and not just sit up in this, you know, throne in the tower in New York City and say, this is what you should wear and do, be, and all that stuff. You need to go and see who are they wearing and what are they doing and who are they being, and then learn how to meet them where they are. So all of that experience, I will say, was really powerful for me and continues to be impactful on me today.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I can imagine so. So like we were talking about before, working at places like Essence, especially in the times where not everyone had access to creating content, you know, a lot of people call themselves now content creators, you know, these days, but back then you were like an OG content creator before it was even a thing. What do you think, or what do you feel like it takes to be an effective content creator?
I think to be an effective content creator, well, one, I think sort of speaking to what I mentioned about getting to know your audience or being clear on who your audience is or who you want your audience to be. Who is the woman or the person that you're speaking to? What are they about? What are they already up to? What are you bringing to the table for them? One of the things that I did was create a course on creating your brand story, which is something people ask me about all the time. And those are some of the questions that I tell people to ask themselves, you know, first starting with who are you? Right. What are you about and what are you up to? And then where are you leading people? What kind of things are you introducing them to? I think those are some of the things that can really go into creating great content when you think about when you're clear about who you are and what you want to present, but then again, what you're offering to that person and where that person is. How are you? Connection is really what it's all about, right? Mm-hmm. I think also another great thing just from a strategic standpoint with content is don't be afraid to niche down and niche down and niche down. Sometimes we want to be so general as opposed to, you know, for me, for example, okay, I'd speak to women, but I really focus on women entrepreneurs. And now I'm even starting to speak more when I talk to my guests and say, my audience is really women entrepreneurs, but a lot of them are either side hustling or in the early stage of business, or they're about to launch. Mm-hmm. So I'm even getting more specific as I'm learning more, as I said, about the audience. So for those listening, don't be afraid to not just do beauty. Maybe it's, you know, beauty for certain skin tones, or maybe it's, you know, certain kinds of beauty or different, there's different things that you can look at in a way to make what you offer more specific so that people really know what you're about. And you can always expand that, but don't be afraid to niche down because everybody's doing something general. It right. doesn't make you stand out to just be in a category for the sake of being in a category. Right. What are you doing that's specific?
Right. And there's so many content creators out there now and just people that are putting their voices out there because we have so much more access now. So I do agree, you know, like you said, even if you're working like such a broad space, like the beauty space, okay, maybe you work on beauty, you work with and share content for products that are organically based and that's right. all you work on, you know, just give yourself some way. And I really, really like that you touched on giving some expertise in a scenario, basically, and offering and knowing what you're offering to these people and where you're leading them. Because if you're unclear about where you're going and you don't know, and you're just sort of like coasting along, it's going to go nowhere. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. that's just mm-hmm. what we know to be true. People like strength when they're being led somewhere, and confidence. And to be honest, even if you don't know what you're doing sometimes, but you come off like you are, that's why so many people you see and you might be thinking, wow, but I know more than them. But how do they come off? And how do you come off? You know, you have to come off with this air of confidence, like you know what you're doing, because if you don't, people don't want to follow you. So I really like that you touched on that for sure.
And if I could add to that, that's a great point. I think too, for people who might be, whether you're starting a blog or any other kind of content and thinking about it, even if you aren't the authority, I think to your point, you definitely have to have the confidence. But I also think, okay, if you're not the authority, but you have a deep interest in whatever this thing is, mm-hmm. you be the person who finds the experts and brings those experts to other people.
I
know, you know, for me, that's something with, even with Support Is Sexy. I'm a woman entrepreneur building a business. I just started, you know, I would say in the past year, really focusing on becoming an online entrepreneur. That's my thing now. That's my focus, putting it out there. That's my focus. But for me, I feel like I'm not an expert in being an online entrepreneur. I'm along the journey, or even just a woman entrepreneur in general. But I have spoken to over 150 powerful women entrepreneurs like you and talk to them about their journey and their business and their strategies. And then I bring that to my audience. So I'm not saying that I'm the authority. I speak about my own experience, but I'm going to go out and find the authority in these other people. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing for people, instead of just so no one feels like they have to wait to become this expert, right? Or pretend, to your point, pretending to be an expert when you're not necessarily. You can be the person that curates that content for people.
Absolutely. Excellent point. I love that. Excellent point. Now, the publishing media, like this industry, has changed a lot, in especially recent years, with you know, publishers feeling, not feeling, but knowing that they have to adapt more to the digital space and sort of, like you said, meet their customers where they are, because everyone's on their phones and consuming quickly and all of that. Now, there's a lot of people that are still going traditional routes and not trying to create their own content and trying to work for some of these major companies. Do you have any advice for those that are looking to maybe start a career in, with traditional media companies?
I think starting with start with the digital platforms. A lot of these media companies, a lot of them need support in those areas, whether they're looking for additional content, because it's so fast paced now, especially for the bigger companies that are trying to keep up. A lot of them, the bigger publishing companies, in my humble opinion, are kind of started late with adapting to the digital space, because you know, magazines were everything, especially when I started magazines. I remember when we first started talking about websites and trying to figure, when we didn't have email, that's how old
right.
I remember all of that. Right. So I think a lot of the bigger companies felt like it would sort of go away, or it just would be the side thing, sort of like people used to say about social media. And now it's, you know, on the news, they're always talking about social media. In any case, I think, though, to that point, maybe start with, if you're trying to enter the business, even if you're trying to go the traditional route, maybe going through the website is the first way to really get in there. Getting into a magazine is not impossible, but usually people have certain writers that they work with, or whether they're on staff, or they might have some freelancers that they work with. And of course you can pitch, you know, stories to magazines or traditional outlets, and knowing, make sure you know what you're pitching as far as if it really works for them. Don't make it too general. Think about, does this really, again, knowing your audience. So if you're pitching to an editor, would this editor really like this, and why would it work for the magazine? But I think it, I have found for most of the people that I mentor and work with, going through the website first is a great way to get started, especially if you don't already have a byline and that kind of thing. If you just have your blog and that, which is great, that's still writing experience, but do you have a byline with a publication? Have you been somewhere else? And doing, working for the website might have to be for a low amount. I don't even know what they pay right now. Is a great way to start. And then you can transition to pitch more to the magazines or newspapers traditionally.
Right, right. So I'm sure that, you know, in the work that you do, you probably see this yourself, that change and fear of like the unknown, it hinders and stops a lot of people from going after what they truly want. Can you share a time with us when you had to encounter a big change in life and how you dealt with facing that change?
Encounter a big change. Well, I will say, I don't know if this is a big change, but it was a big choice for me. Recently I was consulting at Huffington Post, I will say the name of the company. They're fantastic. I loved working with that entire team there. This was last year. And it was for a certain amount of time, I was filling in for someone as an executive editor there. And we had been talking about me continuing to work with them with a sort of flexible schedule. So meaning not in the office as much, because I've been, you know, sort of freelance and doing that for several years and didn't want to have to be in the office every day. And it was all working out up until the last minute for whatever reason, things happen. And they wanted me to be, there still, which is great, but they wanted me to be full time. I really went through a tough time of deciding, do I want to go back into a full-time 9-to-5 in the office at 9 every day, leave at 6, you know, kind of routine? Or did I really want to try this online entrepreneur thing? And of course, I had to weigh, you know, that was a salary and that was going to be all the perks of working at a big company like a Huffington Post and all those great things versus at the time, this was right before I was going to start my podcast. So I already had the idea and I had planned to launch when I left there. And so all these other things were on the table for me. And as I said, really being like, no, I'm going to give this a try. So it was very scary. But I did have the conversation with them and tell them, you know, look, I really want to give this a try. I would love to continue to work with you guys. And I still do talk to all of them and that kind of thing. But I decided not to take the offer to be there full time. That was, you know, like I said, that was just last year. It was really, I wondered, and I still, I wouldn't say now, but for a while I had moments where I was like, maybe I should have taken that, you know, when the money's not flowing in like it. And I also think about, you know, for your listeners to think about, sometimes though, I will say, I wish I had thought about this more. I'm not saying I would have made a different choice, but also I'm starting to think more of how can this be, or could this be a both and as opposed to an either or.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So,
yes.
I, like I said, I don't know if I would have made a different choice, but I would have probably considered it differently if I thought, okay, well, if they want me to be here, is there a way that this could be a both and I still do my, you know, 5 day a week podcast and whatever else I wanted to do, mm-hmm. as opposed to, no, it has to be me doing this or me being there.
Yeah.
And it probably could have been in both and, but I, like I said, I wasn't thinking that way. But for everyone listening, when you are facing something that is either scary or big change, try to think about the both and possibilities as opposed to either or. Now, sometimes it is an either or choice, right? Like for me recently, I relocated to Atlanta to be closer to my parents and honestly to move out of New York for a while and just, you know, regroup and really focus on my business in a way that I couldn't necessarily do there. That was an either or. You're staying in New York or you're moving to Atlanta. You know, right, that was either
right,
or.
Right.
But there are most times, I would say most times too, when you approach it that way, there is usually a way to make it a both and, especially in a case like with me, where you are working with a person or a company or whatever it is that wants to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I will say that was the most recent thing I could think of.
I love you sharing that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
One of the things that I thought about after I left the NBA was, and this goes to your point about both and, it's just, you know, when you come into a situation and like the Huffington Post where you were, and they know what you're doing already. They know that you have this independent situation happening and you're not necessarily coming to them from another magazine, signing up specifically or applying for a 9-to-5 position. So it's like when you try and work it out, sometimes there might be more flexibility when someone knows sort of where you're coming from. So even if, and this is for everyone listening, even if you're in a position where you're thinking, okay, I must leave this job and I must quit to, in order to do what it is I really want to do, think of some ways that particular position could work for you with what you want to do outside of that position.
Right,
now,
exactly.
If you have employers or, you know, senior management that they're just not trying to hear anything and you think that they would basically rain on your parade, then obviously take that into consideration. But if you're in a very supportive environment, you know, take classes, do the things that you can do to help benefit yourself, to make your case, let's say, stronger and your presence stronger when you leave, when you finally do walk away, or when you do make any type of transition. Because I will say that's one thing that I wish I would have done. But I can say that now, having gone through everything that I've gone through, but it's been years since I left the NBA. And at the time, I didn't know, I couldn't have even imagined that I'd be where I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
Especially hosting a podcast. What?
Right.
It was not even a thought, you know, but right. Had it been a thought then, yes, there may have been some things that I could have done, some relationships, some studios, all these different things I could have had access to. But sometimes you have to go through your growth periods and you have to learn some things in order to get where you want to be. But just use everything to your advantage. That's basically what we're saying. Use everything that you can to your advantage. And I know a lot of people might be listening to what you just said about, you know, having to make the choice about the 9-to-5 sort of lifestyle again. And a lot of people will probably say, yeah, girl, I think you did the right thing, you know, because everybody sort of is in this mindset right now where they want to escape the 9-to-5. But for those who think that working for yourself is all peachy and fun and freedom, can you share one bit of reality, maybe something that you've learned that might make them think twice about their perception of this lifestyle?
Yes, I think one of the things that I hear often is that people think that working for yourself means you have the freedom to take off as much time as you want to, or you won't have to work as hard or as much. And I have found as an entrepreneur, I work harder than ever. Mm-hmm. But the freedom for me comes in being able to work on the thing that I'm passionate about all of the time. Of course, there's still always things that you have to do and take care of, but that is the big difference. So for, you know, entrepreneurship is a hot topic right now. It's very glamorous. You know, people, however they position it on Instagram or wherever else of what it's all about, they show the nights when you're like, I don't know how I'm going to make this work.
Right.
So there are, I will say that to consider that, not that you shouldn't do it for those reasons, but just to know that this isn't a free pass, so to speak. You have to, you eat what you kill in entrepreneurship, as they say. Mm-hmm. So it's all on you, and the decisions are all on you. I mean, you or your part, if you're working with a partner, but it's all on you to make things work, to figure things out. You don't always have, you know, like I mentioned earlier, the budgets to sort of experiment with things like you would if you were within a company. If you're within a company that is, as you mentioned, giving you, whether they know it or not, an opportunity to learn something that's going to help you in your business, take advantage of that and learn on someone else's dime while you contribute to their company. But you're learning, you know, in that way, because it can be a trying journey. And I, like I said, you can, there are times when you aren't necessarily going to be motivated or want to get up and do whatever it is you have to do. And it's not like you're going to be motivated by, oh, my paycheck or my job or they're expecting me. It's all on you. So, you know, be aware of that. And, but know that you can do it. I mean, it's possible. I've seen the possibilities, and being able to talk to so many women, I've been able to hear their journeys and the possibilities. And one of the things I love about being able to talk to so many women like you is hearing about those hard times or low times or challenging times or uncertain times, and then hearing about the other side of that. Mm-hmm. So that's something to know as well. It's not all good or all bad, like anything, but it's definitely not, you know, rainbows and ponies, like people might have you think.
Exactly. And in those times when it's not exactly like, you know, the brightest of moments every single day, what are some of the things that you find yourself doing to sort of like move forward, to balance things out, and just keep yourself going?
That's a great question. A few things. One thing for me that has been important throughout, I mean, it's been important for years, but even more so since I've started running my own business, is working out. So I run is the thing for me. And that has been great for me in clearing my mind. I love to be outside and just in the zone with the run, but working out in general, but really running is a thing for me that I say running is my meditation. Mm-hmm. I also meditate as well. So taking even 10 minutes a day before you jump into the day, whether that's journaling or sitting quietly. I also have a, what I call a vision recording. So I have a vision board. I'm very into manifesting and visualization. But I have a vision board, but then I also recorded from something I wrote in my journal, sort of an I am recording. Mm-hmm. It's like 5 minutes long. So for example, it says, you know, I am worthy of the life that I envision. I own a successful online business. I am this, I am that. And it's just all positive affirmations in the I am, not I will do this. Mm-hmm. I am doing this, or I am this person, really the person that you envision and want to become. So I listen to that sometimes on a run or while I'm meditating. And then I will say another thing that I learned recently, and I did a podcast episode about this, is the power of compartmentalizing, which is something that men do very well.
Not right.
Most men, right? Women, sometimes we let it all flows into each other.
Right.
But I have had to learn that in business, because there are days when, whether it's something physical, like a, you know, I have a shoulder injury right now. So sometimes it's like hard to sit still and that kind of, but you sort of have to put that in a box, know that that's there, but focus on what needs to get done at the time. Or it could be something in a, you know, a relationship outside of business where things aren't, whatever's happening, things happen, right? And you have to sort of put that over here, but focus on this for the business for this time. And this isn't being cold toward one thing or another, but just knowing that everything, even if everything does affect everything, you can't let it shift everything, if that makes sense. You know, you have to be able to be clear about what you're focused on at that time. And I'm a big fan of Oprah, so I reference her a lot. And I think about, I can't imagine in 25 years how many shows that Oprah maybe didn't want to be there, or something was going on at home with Stedman, or the dog is sick. Well, you just never know what's going on, but you have to be present and in the moment for that amount of time on your business, whatever you're working on, and then know those other things are still going to be there. If it's something urgent, you take care of it. But for me, I've learned, okay, don't worry about that in this moment. Be focused, be present with this person, and then move on to the other thing. So that has been, those are the things that have been really good for me in the past couple of years.
Now, you work with coaching people and working with different people to sort of like make them better and develop strategies and things of that nature. So I'm sure that you know that this whole idea of people not knowing where to start with making a change and their lack of confidence, it plagues a lot of people. What do you do with your clients to help them sort of overcome those types of hurdles, like just that stuck point and not knowing where to start and lack of confidence?
I think the biggest thing that I have learned working with clients is helping them know to just start. Mm-hmm. Right. So as people have the ideas, brilliant. I mean, I've talked to women who have had brilliant ideas they've been sitting on for years, and not because they've been doing the research, which I know is something you're a big proponent of, which is mm-hmm. important, or because they've been anything else that they needed to do. It's really because they're afraid to just start. So I think for a lot of the clients that I work with, we sort of get through that part of being afraid to just start or just do it. In a lot of cases, we've discovered when I talk to them, they already know the answers of at least what they want to try. And I try to explain too that sometimes it's not necessarily a right or wrong. Say you're coming up with a new design for your website or a new strategy for your business or anything like that, or something new that you want to launch or a book that you want to write. Well, there are some things that are right and wrong about how to do something, but really I can't tell you, oh, that book is not going to be a good book, or that, you know, that website design is not going to work. You have to get out there with it. Yeah. People have to be able to give you feedback on it or respond to it and that kind of thing in order for you to know if it's right or wrong. So really it starts with you saying, this is what I think is right. This is the best decision I can make at this time, and I'm going to move forward. So mm-hmm. getting women to the point where I feel like, you know what you want to do, stop worrying about whether it's right or wrong. You don't know. You don't know until you know, right? Or what mm-hmm. do they say? You don't know what you don't know. Right. So you have to get out there and put it out there and get the feedback from your audience, see how people are responding, and constantly tweak along the way, right? Tinker until you get it right. Tweak along the way, people will let you know what's working and not working. And when I say people, I would advise too, and something I advise clients, not people like your friends who they're not really into your business anyway. They love you, but you know, I have friends, they love me to death, but I'm like, oh, listen to this podcast. I'm like, girl, I got these kids. I can't, you know, right. It's just like,
it's not their thing.
Just, right. It's not that. I'm talking about your audience, the people who matter to what you're creating or doing, or the people who are going to buy your product, not general, you know, detractor. You can't worry about that. I'm talking about the people you care about reaching. Let them give you feedback and ask for that feedback and then decide to make the change. But what am I giving you feedback on if I haven't seen your website, I haven't read your book, I haven't done anything, because right now it's just an idea in your head. So that's the thing that I've found is important in helping a lot of women sort of get a few steps in place. And in my mastermind group, that's one of the things we do. What are your commitments this week? What are the three things that you're going to do by next week when we talk again to make it happen? Because sometimes we need, these are the things that I'm accountable for and moving forward in my business, as opposed to it all just floating in your head. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the things that I think, you know, people can do on their own too. What are the three things that I must do by next Thursday or whatever day it is?
Mm-hmm. Just giving yourself a place to sort of get started and holding right. yourself accountable. Yeah. And obviously we know that women supporting women is important to you because you have the Support is Sexy podcast, but why do you think that it's important to you? Like, what is the driving factor behind women supporting women that makes it important to you?
Yeah, I would say that I've always been a girl's girl, all about, you know, being super supportive to anyone really, but I love, you know, supporting women. It's always been my thing. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned a little earlier too, I didn't realize until I went through that workshop called Momentum, how much I was failing to support myself. Now, being independent, which is, that's a whole other story about how a false sense of independence we all have. We're all dependent on someone. But anyway, you know, someone made your clothes. You know, this whole, our universe, we're dependent on each other. That's how we were created. But in any case, but being this independent woman, I can do it. I always say one of the things that we have to get over is quote unquote, I got it syndrome. So if someone offers you help, the first thing you might be like, no, it's okay. I got it. I'm good. I got it. Right. We're so quick to be like, I got it. And maybe you do have it, but can I help you? Like, can you create a space for me to help you? So I was one of those, I got it women. And as I began to talk to other women about support and mentioning this sort of what became a mantra for me, support is sexy, and seeing their faces light up, I realized how many of us as women are afraid to ask for support. And then the other part of that is accepting support. So sometimes we might even say, oh, I need some help with such and such. And then that support shows up in whatever way, maybe some in unexpected way. And then you can't even accept it because you have such a blockage around it. So that's when I became really passionate about the Support is Sexy idea and then pushing it as a quote unquote brand, you know, developing it into what it has become today. At first, it started with just positive messages or quotes. from other women and women entrepreneurs. And I focused on entrepreneurs just because of that creative sensibility. So entrepreneurs and creative. But it became important to me because I just feel like, well, one, I think women will change the world, and we have already. But also, so many of us end up in circumstances where it's not even just I got it syndrome. Some of us end up depressed because we don't know how to ask for support. Or worse, some of us commit suicide because we don't know how to ask for support. But on the outside, to everyone else, we seem like superwomen, right? So it really is something that goes beyond just getting some help on a project you're working on or getting some help with the kids. A lot of us are suffering in silence and ending up in terrible situations, whether even health-wise. A lot more women now are having heart attacks and strokes and other kind of illnesses because of stress and because we won't reach out for support. So there are a lot of reasons that it became really important to me once I started researching it more and looking at just how is this affecting so many of us, all women, all walks of life, all backgrounds, affecting us not being able to not even realizing how much we're not asking for and accepting support in our lives. So I began to think about how I could communicate this message. And when I became excited about podcasts, just first from listening to them, I thought, oh, maybe support is sexy could be an idea for a podcast. And that kind of developed as a way to get that message out to more women.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. That right there. All about it. All about it. Because there's so many unspoken things that we don't deal with as women. So yeah, that's crucial. So I feel like I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Have you figured out your why in life? And would you mind sharing it with us?
Yeah, I think my why is connected now. My why right now, that's a thing too. You know, your why can evolve over time. Mm-hmm. And I will say my why, what truly I am passionate now is about support is sexy, but really this idea of for every woman to know that having it all doesn't mean doing it all alone. And that is something that I say in conjunction with support is sexy all the time. So we can have it all, do it all these things that we're all up to and busy and making it happen, but you don't have to do it all alone. You deserve support. So I think my why is really spreading that message, and that makes you even do even more and be even more powerful, and to know that you deserve support in the universe and people will show up for you if you just create space for that.
Exactly. So what does success mean or look like for you in particular?
I think thinking about my vision recording, success looks like, to sum it all up, I would say freedom, which we sort of spoke about earlier. And freedom for me is really, I would say, of my time and space and energy and what I spend my time on and my efforts. So when I think about it, that is what what success as far as in business looks like for me, and in life too, just the freedom to have the space to do the things that I really am passionate about and things that I feel like are aligned with who I am and what I'm all about. So yeah, I would say that would be, if I had to define success, that would be it. And being fulfilled, you know, Tony Robbins says, success is nothing without fulfillment, right? Mm-hmm. So I think feeling fulfilled and like I'm really contributing in a way that is aligned with who I am at this time in my life, what I'm all about, and what my personal mission is.
Love that. Love that. Thank you so much for such an insightful and inspirational interview. This has been
fun. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm so happy you had me here.
Yes, I'm so happy to have had you. And make sure you keep up with Elaine and all the goodness that she has to offer. And you can find her at supportissexy.com, on Instagram and Twitter at supportissexy, and on Facebook, Support Sexy. No is needed. In any case, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Thank you especially for sharing the show. And as always, keep killing it.